So what we're going to do now is go back to McLuhan's predictions in 1979 for the 80s and see if it touches what we're talking about here.
Okay.
So we got halfway through this article called Living at the Speed of Light, where Marshall McLuhan and his son in late 79 for Canada's national magazine called McLean's Magazine were writing an article predicting what would happen in the 80s. And you can go back to last week and then 2 weeks before that and hear on what the parts of the article we've read so far. So now we're down in a section called, we just did Abrasive Encounters a la Third World, the next part, Home Rule by Computer Feedback. Okay, so we got down to, I'll reread the beginning of the paragraph that we stopped in the middle of. When voting can be done by home computer, now this is before the famous 1984 Apple computer ad for the Super Bowl that told people that they could actually have their own private computer. You know about that, Brent? You know about that famous ad?
No, I don't.
Yeah, you could probably just check it on the internet. It was a sensational, one of the most successful ads or some kind of extreme conclusion about it. So in the Super Bowl in January 84, Steve Jobs' Apple company had some woman sort of running into, in an athletic setting, running in and confronting the Big Brother image of 1984, Orwell's book, 1984, and smashing the Orwellian dictatorship, or the leading human representative of the fascism. And it was telling people, you can get free of the totalitarianism of the 70s and 80s by getting his computer. So that would give you a chip body autonomy. So that commercial, McLuhan is predicting this 5 years before about the takeover by home computer. All right? So he says, when voting can be done by home computer, it will become a new form of belligerent home rule. Now, belligerent home rule is what we witnessed in the Trump era of everybody, you know, Facebooking, Instagramming, and yelling their concerns at everybody else, and a real Tower of Babel of noise, and everybody demanding their scene, what they do at home, become the general rule. So he predicted that, and he was talking about the slogan in Ireland in the end of the 19th century where they wanted to sort of politically not be such a colony of London, of England. So they were asking for home rule. So McLuhan, always fitting in with the Irish classic Finnegan's Wake, always having a bit of an Irish subplot. So he says, when voting can be done by home computer, it will become a new form of belligerent home rule. Such, quote, ideal democracy, as one, unquote, as one constituted by a plebiscite in all issues, would capsize our government. So McLuhan does not see the democracy that home computers would bring in as a good thing. He said it would just cause a problem for the federal bureaucracy. There could be worse fates, such as rule by multinational corporations. So the antidote ain't too good. Once a home computer is available as the means of shopping and voting, there will be in the 80s, now this is 37 years ago, there will be in the 80s a return to cottage economy. Now, I was talking to a guy in Toronto. He's a lefty, a working class in the theater world, but he talks to a lot of people, working class people that he knew, grew up with, and they call it a gig economy. Did you know that, Carol?
No.
Yeah, the phrase that the working class, the people in unions, they're up against the idea that you'll never get a job and go work for IBM. Nobody thinks that they're going to get a job, and Brent lives with this, in some corporation for life. So when you get a job, it's sort of like a lot of temp employment. It's a gig, like in music. So they call it a gig economy. where you work somewhere, if you're lucky, for a while, and then you're dumped, and then you have to find another gig. So McLuhan's term for it 40, 50 years ago was a cottage economy, the return to a cottage economy. There are a lot of people working at home for short in economic input. So he says, once a home computer is available as the means of shopping and voting, there will be in the 80s a return to cottage economy. Home computer, TV, and telephone links will permit business, big and small, to be done at home. Leaving home to go to work became a feature of the industrial system with the rise of factories. Prior to factories, the craftsmen and the men of the soil alike did their work at home. In the 80s, with the decentralizing of big business and big cities, high-rise office and apartment buildings will become obsolete. In brackets, although they could have many these buildings, they could have many residual uses such as daycare centers or playgrounds for the aged. Similarly, the old hardware unions will be obsolesced by the new decentralized cottage economy patterns. The cottage economies may retrieve the old guild patterns, the medieval guild patterns, instead. Now, that would be partly the mafia's takeover of some of these hardware unions, decentralized mafia control. But the now he's saying this, Brent. This is the world that you guys didn't know. This is January 1980, late 79, and McLuhan's had his stroke. He's now can't speak, read, or what would be a third thing, Calum? No, that's speak. He can't speak. He can't read. Maybe it's just those two things. He can hear. His mind is, 100% effective in hearing what's being going on. It can see, hear meaning, but he can't express and respond to it. So he's laid up. He's almost a metaphor for the Android mean, because whenever any major technology came in, starting in the late 40s when TV came in, McLuhan always got sick. He seemed like to be the canary, picked up on the disservices of these things. So here's the Android meme starting to come in. Within a year, Reagan is going to be elected. And that's a new virtual kind of odd presidency. And McLuhan's predicting a year before that amazing decentralization will take over. So, I didn't finish. So what happened in the summer of 1981, the first unions to go up against whatever Reagan represented were the air traffic controllers. And they got beat bad. And so in union history, that was the beginning of the Reagan era, which was anti-working class and all the bad things they said about Reagan. It began, as McLuhan predicted, for the unions. It wasn't good. What were we going to say, Carol?
You mentioned that McLuhan said people would be doing their shopping by computer. Look at Amazon, the multi-billion.
But that took it. Now, when did they start? Mid-90s? Probably when everybody got online in 95, about the time they started. So, McLuhan's talking about that 15 years ahead of time. He talks about it in his 1972 book, Take Today, the Executive's Dropout. He talks about the world shopping center in your home. So he was up on the computer effects, and everybody thought it was happening in the future. And it did happen a little later than his 80s thing. It became a 90s thing. But as he said, the old hardware unions will be obsolesced by the new decentralized cottage economy patterns. So Amazon, the cottage economy or the home shopping network thing, now is the richest guy in the world. I think he is. He's up there, competing with Buffett and other people. Not that that means anything to be the richest guy in the world. I mean, that guy is under constant image pressure. Let me see. Are you still there, Brent, or did you get muted?
I'm here, Bob. I muted myself.
Okay. All right. So then the next sentence. Another aspect of decentralism is the big committee phenomenon fostered by the Xerox service of position papers. So you think of a capitalist world or right-wing world or a left world. Here's what's really happening. These committees do not make decisions. They describe conditions and make suggestions. They do not represent the people. They are. Big business and unions alike will undergo radical transformation by their juxtaposition to cottage economies. The organization chart is obsolete at electric speed, and the executives are still falling out of the branches. Then he says, see, take today, our book, 1972. Under electric conditions and home computer use, the bureaucratic hierarchy is dissolved as effectually as is the need for high-rise. Along with the elimination of the organization chart, there go all other bureaucratic job structures. The unions, being extreme forms of bureaucratic organization, are naturally reduced to oral person-to-person structure under the conditions of cottage economy and computer services. Now, that's what we heard from friend Don in the 80s. He's telling me by the end of the 80s that his working-class buddies, would rely on word of mouth of where they'd get the next part-time gig. And they would have a little network. Somebody would work part-time, and then he'd hand it off to someone else. So the working class really, the old hardware guys really were in a state of panic from that point on. And the ones that went into the more computer businesses or more and more software economy, they got temporary pretty good jobs. So you had the population, those that went digital, hijacking the world from those that remained hardware, which is now supposed to be the reason Trump was elected. The abandoned working class, the old hardware people, finally got pissed off, and they object to the high-tech, computerized, digital Illuminati that operate the cities. So you have this urban-rural battle, but it's really hardware versus software. Does that make any sense to you, Brent?
Yes, it does, but I feel like that's definitely flipped, right? That the hardware people are doing pretty well now.
Yeah, America has become so, as McCloon predicted, third world, and collapsed in so many levels that just to get basic services for your chemical body is a growth industry. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, you were saying that the software guys hijacked the economy from the hardware guys, and then Trump is bringing the hardware guys back, and I think he actually has successfully done that. I've heard people that work at construction unions pretty much stand around and get paid pretty good money now just because no one wants to do it.
Right. And now there's lots of digital economy going on. There's cutbacks in these things, but most people are heading towards soft jobs. Nobody in your college class is thinking of becoming a construction worker.
No.
They call it the service industries. Way back in the 60s, McLuhan said service industries will take over. I guess tourism, hotel, waiter jobs, all this sort of leisure money, the leisure class, providing environments for them, maybe just being a guide at Disneyland. These are service industries. And the making of hardware or new technologies in the traditional sense was shipped offshore. And so people have jobs typing. Their main thing is to get some gig where they appreciate your typing, which is
Sounds pretty awful, crummy
to me.
Sounds terrible.
Awful, right?
Oh,
yeah, you have
awful.
To sit there all day. It's better to have a hardware job if it's in terms of keeping your body going, but because you don't get any proper nutrition or minerals, that's going to nail you pretty quickly. But if you're on our products, you can be a healthy hardware worker.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, so that's the end of that session, which was called Home Rule by Computer Feedback. And McLuhan said that what we're doing, what his article was doing, was providing feed forward, anticipation of what was coming, not just reacting. Feedback is reaction. Feed forward is an art. So the next stage is the next category of predictions, education in the age of amnesia. In the 80s, both curriculum and job shortages are phased out by a shift to learning a living. In the 18th century, now I remember looking back 30, 40 years, I know a lot of people that didn't go to college in the 60s and 70s. I noticed a lot of them, the few I heard about, They're not academic inclined, but they all went back to college in the 80s. It was the only way to be economic viable. You had to go to school for a while. You had to catch up. So that's what he's predicting here. Learning a living. Not earning a living, learning a living. In the 18th century, it was recognized that education was what remained when you'd forgotten everything you had been taught. Education was what remained when you'd forgotten everything you had been taught. And says here, quote, "He was a great man, sir. He was a great man, sir. He thrashed my grandfather." So it was recognized that education was what remained when you'd forgotten everything you had been taught. So not sure how that works as a joke. You get it? Somehow the kid remembered what he was educated about was what happened to his grandfather. So maybe they're studying someone in history, Cromwell or something, or Disraeli in British history. And the only thing that the working class guy knew was that Cromwell beat up his grandfather. Anyways, that's supposedly. So it was recognized in the 18th century that education was what remained when you'd forgotten everything you had been taught. And, quote, "He was a great man, sir. He thrashed my grandfather," unquote. At present, there is little relationship between what you study and what job you get. Although it has been noticed that the new forms of work, which he calls role-playing, no longer include what used to be called a job. So they've noticed that what you study in school had really no bearing for where you ended up as a role-player. And it was no longer the traditional content of a job. In the electric information environment, the curriculum of subjects and credits and exams is obsolesced by the knowledge industries. The city has already become a classroom or little red schoolhouse. Compulsory education, in brackets, equality without liberty will disappear in the 80s, replaced by continuing education. Education will become liberal by default. So you could say that didn't happen. Education got more and more fanatic in sticking to its what it thought were basics. And everybody but could put on Ritalin to put up with it. So there's an example, Brent, of management stopping the predictions, the inevitable adjustments that should have happened. If you just stop, put the brakes on, you'll end up with this frustrated, fucked up, Ritalin-soaked school system. And that's what happened because they couldn't really adapt to learning a living. So then McLuhan says, education will become liberal by default, I guess that means studying the humanities. Then McLuhan says, the old idea of every man's right to an education will flip into literacy as an elite privilege only, a return to a much earlier phase of culture. So you get in the private schools, the upper middle class schools, emphasis on the on the old litter values. That would be the Robin Williams movie, Oh Master, Oh Master. What was that? The Poet Society or something? You remember that, Brent? The Dead Poet Society? You ever see that movie?
No, I thought you were going to say World's Best Dad. That movie was awful.
No. No. So anyways, parents doing their damnedest to get kids into private schools is what he's predicting here. Literacy will be an elite privilege. So you see these old-fashioned upper middle-class schools being portrayed as very rigorous and disciplined education, not that the kids could take it, but they were put into that environment. And the regular schools are just being riddled by gangs and hip-hop culture or heavy metal culture in the 80s, punk culture. You know, it was pretty bad for getting literate values in the working class school systems. So he predicted that it would become an elite privilege, which it did. New attitudes to literacy are evident in, for example, the increasing pressure in our secondary schools and colleges not to fail students. In other words, literacy wasn't as required. You could be a little more slack in the public schools about enforcing literate standards that people no longer had been programmed to naturally express. So new attitudes to literacy are evident in, for example, the increasing pressure in our secondary schools and colleges not to fail students, or in the phenomenon of the bright but illiterate youngster who has made it. No, I'll read that again. Or in the phenomenon of the bright but illiterate youngster who has made it to or even through grade 12. So that phenomenon of people getting out of high school and are illiterate. Few professors in any environment will demand or expect that essays or reports reflect literacy in any serious sense. That is, that goes beyond mere decipherment of can labels, instruction books, or newspaper headlines, or soporific bestsellers. So the standards for literacy, McLuhan's predicting, would go way down. Now, Brent, this is a generation before you. This is Generation X that we're talking about. So you guys, if someone had projected from 1979 to where you are in your schools, what a change, what a radical shifting of values that would they'd see.
Yeah,
in the 80s.
And that,
go ahead.
And the No Child Left Behind policy, where they're, you know, not failing kids and they're pushing them through the grades, that's even became a thing in university. And this sounds kind of harsh, but I hear professors saying, well, if you have a learning accommodation, you need to take it up with, you know, the certain faculty in the school, and you'll get an accommodation such as extra time or an easier test or a modified test. And my thoughts were always, well, if you can't do the work, then why are you in college? Shouldn't you be doing something else? I mean, I don't.
Yeah, see, that's
I don't get how they can push you through that if you can't do the work.
Because the educational system is not relevant. Learn what you're taught in university is not going to be useful in your job. Now, maybe if you get a higher, you move up the ladder, the executive ladder, then you got to be literate. But for most people, they're just going to start typing. You don't have to know much to do that. So
yeah, it's like if you need an accommodation to do your calculus exam and you're in school to become an engineer, then how are you going to be an engineer? Are you going to take three times as long as
everyone
else?
Well, it's all done by computer, I guess, now.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's like, okay, you grow up in Saudi Arabia and you go through the Muslim religion, and you follow the rules, and then you graduate from high school, and then you ship to New York. For some reason, you end up in New York City. You're going to have to drop all that stuff and become a, you know, flaming pagan doing ayahuasca and Brooklyn discos, you know, as part of your lifestyle. You might go back home and put on the robes, but the culture, the local cultures are irrelevant to the way the majority of population lives now in their chip body. So that just began. McLuhan saw that coming in the 80s, and now it's, you know, a fact, what you're talking about. They are just, it's fundamentalism. You must have books, be part of a youthful environment in so-called schools to maintain America's rearview mirror corporate identity. Just like you got to be a Muslim manuscript reader in the Arab lands. Everybody takes an old cultural thing and props it up as a valid value, and it has no real effect on people. So you got more and more people being pushed through because literacy can't be implanted in your school system. Like you said, Brent, in the chat line, you said you're reading. You apologize that you read a book.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot. I'm actually
noticing. And
none
of your friends read. No, your friends don't read books.
Yeah, 90% of them don't read. I'd say there's a 10% that still like to read. But I'm definitely recognizing how it's changing my perceptions. I'm actually able to string together thoughts a little bit more coherently. Before that, my thoughts were more scattered, and they were more ESB and just feelings. I couldn't piece them together. But as I read more, I actually can categorize them better, which is very strange to me.
Right. It's also an ability you have to hide, unless at parties you want to impress people, you do it. But the trend is against you having that ability.
Hey, you know, it's a really funny satire against books. There's that Ty Lopez guy on YouTube that does the sponsored ads, and he has the Ferraris in his garage, and he says, well, hey, you know, Ferraris and making money are important, but I really care about knowledge and reading books. This guy boasts that he reads, like, a book a day or something, and that's became, like, a huge satirical joke among my generation. Like, oh, yeah, you're pretty smart. You read 10 books a day, bro. Like, you're reading a lot of books lately. And it's kind of just really poking fun at people that read books.
That's it. Yeah, there you go.
So people say, some of my friends say I act like him because they're like, dude, you're talking about fucking books. We can't tell if you're joking. You've been talking about books lately. You've been reading books.
What do you think of that, Carol? I think the principals of the schools ignore this. But they're taking their Adderall to keep up with their students and their fake jobs. Okay, so in the 80s, however, reading can labels, instruction books, or newspaper headlines or soporific bestsellers in the 80s, however, these latter will be the basic criteria of literacy, while unreadable linguistic prose will become the mark and nourishment of the elite. In the 80s, there will be a great reduction in the generation gap. So that was a phrase in the boomer era. The kids left home, couldn't take their parents. The parents couldn't take the kids. But there's going to be a reduction in the generation gap, he predicts. In the 70s, it widened from 2,500 years to 2,500 years, from literacy to post-literacy, as parents who had grown up in a literate world faced post-literate children. In the amnesia of... No, everybody's forgetting everything on top of this. In the amnesia of the 80s, as the parents also lose their literacy and their forbidding and formidable identity profile, the young will feel free to come home again. This has led to, you know, parents being buddies of their kids, right? That's what the cliche is now. It is easy to forget that compulsory education began only in 1852 in Massachusetts, reaching Ontario, Canada in 1871. It did not become universal in North America until after the First World War, as a big move in the energy crisis of that time. Now, the steady pressure of post-industrial electric information is towards the oral, A-U-R-A-L, / oral, O-R-A-L. From status to contract reverses from contract to status once more. So you're going from, you had contract and then you got status. Now you get status so you can get contract. I'm not sure what that means. From status to contract reverses from contract to status once more. In 1946, Clark and Sloan, two economists at Columbia University, published a study of, quote, classrooms in the factories. That's the name of the book, unquote. Classrooms in the factories. Among their findings was the fact that the budget for education on company time exceeded by several times the community budget for formal education, whether on the primary, secondary, or university level. Since then, the ratio of such expenditure has multiplied many times. Clark and Sloan had not even considered the Army, Navy, and Air Force as educational centers. In brackets, in third world countries, the military usually takes over because they are the only literate group as the third world goes industrial. The hidden curriculum for our children in the 80s will be training in how illiterates can make it in a formally literate world and how to lead without a goal. Reading that again. The hidden curriculum for our children in the 80s will be training in how illiterates can make it in a formally illiterate world and how to lead without a goal. So more and more education was geared toward illiterates or post-literates. They had a better chance to get into a world which had no goals. How to lead without a goal was the training that one potential manager had to have. In the 80s, what used to be called liberal education, the training of the all-around man, which the model was Homer's Ulysses, who was, quote, the man of many devices, or take 007, McLuhan says, the James Bond character, who is the resourceful and creative leader in any and every crisis. That kind of person will be found only in the ranks of commandos and guerrilla fighters. Presently, liberal education fits men to be only bureaucrats and functionaries. In the atomic world, access to the button is not dependent upon human learning and letters, but only on bureaucratic authority. So, literacy will be found among the terrorists, the ranks of commandos and guerrilla fighters. Okay, you got another minute. Learning in the environment of electric information confronts us paradoxically with the traditional ideal of a liberal educational. Cardinal Newman saw it as training for leaders, a program that dispensed with classes and credits and relied on what today is called the rap session, in which the conversation of all served as lectures for each. Problem solving for leadership has to dispense with the expert who knows, we've tried it before, it doesn't work, says the expert. This is a return to the oral tradition, you know, ignoring the expert. Commando training requires awareness of the overall situation, since he, like the guerrilla, often has to make decisions without consultation that affect everybody. This is training for leadership and initiative, which is beyond the range of the specialist. In an information environment, as hardware is In the information environment, as hardware is etherealized, doing more and more with less and less, leadership training or survival training calls for inclusive awareness and survival initiative. A navigator doesn't have a specialist goal. He has to keep a total situation in mind. In the 80s, this includes the roles of artists and satirists as a distant early warning system. The arts give an infallible reading of the psychic and cultural climate. In the 80s, the arts also will return to the oral tradition. And we'll redo that paragraph next time, but we hope it's helped illuminate your world.